Today on this national holiday to honor Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., we speak with the 85-year-old pastor of Salem Baptist Church in Champaign who was involved in Illinois' civil rights movement.
Dr. King always talked about that we should not be judged by the color of our skin, but by the content of our character. And he was always dreaming of a better day ahead. And I'm certain that if he were alive today, he would be surprised that we hadn't made as much progress as he felt that we should have made.
Plus, the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library and Museum will also honor Dr. King by having one of its museum actors read Dr. King's famous I Have a Dream speech.
Free at last, free at last. Thank God Almighty, we are free at last.
We speak with Reggie Guyton about how one prepares to read one of America's most famous speeches and talk to the library about the links between President Lincoln and Dr. King. That's all coming up this hour on the 21st. Stay tuned. Welcome to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. Today, our nation honors the life of Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.
50 years ago, a great American in whose symbolic shadow we stand today signed the Emancipation Proclamation. This momentous decree came as a great beacon light of hope to millions of Negro slaves who had been seared in the flames of withering injustice. It came as a joyous daybreak to end the long night of their captivity. But 100 years later, the Negro still is not free.
That speech in the shadow of the Lincoln Memorial is one of the most memorable reasons why we have a national holiday to commemorate the civil rights leader. Later in the hour, we'll be talking about the connection between President Lincoln and Dr. King. But first, we wanted to take some time this morning to speak with someone in Central Illinois who was involved in the civil rights movement here in our state in the 50s and 60s. He's met Dr. King himself and spent the past several decades working to honor his life while continuing to be active in efforts for equality for all people in East Central Illinois. Reverend Claude Shelby is pastor of Salem Baptist Church in Champaign. He's also the founder of the Martin Luther King Jr. Community Celebration that's taken place every year at the Cranert Center for the Performing Arts since 1986. Pastor Shelby, welcome to the 21st. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
You grew up in Brooklyn, Illinois.
Brooklyn, Illinois.
Near East St. Louis.
It's no one locator. Knows where it is.
Right. That's why I was saying that. You were a pastor at the time that Dr. King came into public eye during the civil rights movement. What was it about Dr. King that first caught your attention?
Well, the thing that caught my attention was the fact that he was such a powerful individual and one who dedicated his life to the civil rights movement. Although being a pastor, certainly he had communication with the higher power, and he had the attention of individuals that were striving for freedom. And so he just stepped in and tried to help out wherever he could. And he emerged as one of the main leaders in the civil rights movements.
Now, would you say at the time, I'm just trying to do the math in my head here, you all were basically, you were contemporaries at the time that he became a pastor, right? You all were about the same age?
Yes, he's 2 years my senior.
2 years your senior.
Yes.
So I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about your childhood, where you grew up, and your path to the ministry and becoming a pastor.
Oh, boy. Well, I grew up in Brooklyn, Illinois, where I was born. My mother and father were from the South. My father was from Batesville, Arkansas. My mother was from Tupelo, Mississippi. They met in Illinois and got married, and my father worked for the railroad, although he was a pastor as well. He had other jobs along the way and moved to Mount Vernon, and from Mount Vernon, Illinois, to Brooklyn, Illinois, and that's where I was born. And back in the early days, we certainly were very individual that had to comport to strict rules from our parents. And we grew up in church and always doing the things that we knew were pleasing in the sight of God, although, you know, we all err along the way. But that was our main underpinnings in our religious upbringing. And our parents were very religious, and they certainly showed us the way. And growing up in Brooklyn, Illinois.
Primarily a black city, right, Brooklyn?
It was a black city, a black village. I can remember the population sign, 2,200. I don't know what it is today, but I remember the old sign. And I went through our school there and went in the military. And while I was in the military, I got married. And then we started raising a family. And
you moved to Champaign-Urbana in
1981. I was called here to pastor Salem Baptist Church in 1981.
That's what brought you here.
So I had a lot of things that have gone on in my life over the years.
Yeah, and I wonder if we could go back to that, because part of the reason why I was asking about your childhood was, I imagine when you first encountered Dr. King, also a pastor, I wonder how much you saw a similarity in his upbringing and yours in terms of, I wonder what it was like, segregation was like growing up in Brooklyn, Illinois during the period you grew up in.
Well, experiencing segregation in my town, being an all-black town, it was unheard of. There were enough.
You didn't really leave that town then when you were a kid, did you?
No. I lived there until I came to Champaign in 1981, although I had a brief period where I lived directly in East St. Louis, but during my early marriage, but that was only several years. But my main place of residence was always Brooklyn, Illinois. And our schools and our post office, those entities were named after Elijah P. Lovejoy. So before the advent of zip codes, we would always send our mail to Lovejoy, Illinois. And but since they have zip codes now, the mail would go to the right place. But then our school system was the Brooklyn school system number 188.
And was that but school system primarily a black school system?
Yes. Always okay. Black superintendents, black school board members, and the like. I served on the school board, by the way, for some 23 and a half years. And the reason I had to get off the school board, I was moving to Champaign in 1981. And I never lost a school board election from my early 20s all the way up until I came to Champaign.
Well, when you mention the school board, it makes me think about the 50s and the 60s. So much of the civil rights movement, issues that the South was dealing with in terms of school segregation and integration. What was going on in Illinois in the 50s and 60s? What would you say the 50s and 60s were like for you growing up as an African American?
Well, for me, I never experienced school segregation. Mm-hmm. I never experienced that because we had all black schools, and we always had a few white residents ever since I was born. I always knew of some few white families that were there, and they were there by choice, and we got along just fine. We didn't have any problems, any racial problems in a town like Brooklyn. And after growing up there, I remember some years as a younger person that we could not eat at the lunch counters at the main, SS Kresge stores. You might
the
not
department
have,
store.
Yeah, mm-hmm. we could never.
So you couldn't eat there.
No,
you
no.
Actually participated in a sit-in.
Yes, we did.
What prompted that?
Well, I was a member of the Congress of Racial Equality. They called it CORE, and there were times when we did sit-ins there, and that was about the extent of my participation with CORE, those few sit-ins.
What was it like to participate in a sit-in?
Well, you know, there are always people sneering at you, and
Did you encounter hostility?
Not a whole lot. Being in Illinois, we had a pretty peaceful kind of experience there. It was never real hostile. But we did have the opportunity to force a change. And then we had the desegregation of the lunch counters. That was the most, that was the glaring part.
So when you did that, so you did the sit-in, and what happened?
Yeah, well, we were able to finally get those counters open to everybody.
And, how long did, do you remember how long that took?
Well, in my memory, it seems as though it was only a couple of years that we had to struggle.
So you had a couple of years.
Yes, a couple of years. Yes.
And how else were you involved in the civil rights movement?
Well, not being in the South, I just tried to work for human decency and equality in, you know, public accommodations and things of that nature. You know, there were times that as a young Christian growing up, we would attend the conventions in various places, and we always stayed in homes. The hotels weren't open to us. And so I wasn't directly involved in getting the hotels open, you know, to everybody. However, I did experience the fact that we had to stay in homes. Just as here in Champaign, one of the members that was there at Salem, Mother Catherine Jones, used to house students there. In Champaign on Church Street. She had a large house. She would house students when students couldn't stay on campus here. Yeah, and she would cite some of those.
They couldn't stay on campus here?
No.
Because they weren't allowed to?
They were not allowed to. Black students could not stay on campus. The black students back in that early days had to stay in homes in the north end of Champaign.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they couldn't stay in the dorms.
And so what year was that? When was that?
I really don't know because I wasn't here in Champaign,
okay,
but
right.
I did hear
you heard this story.
What took
sure.
place because Mother Jones fasted mm-hmm. along, and mm-hmm. she was there, just a sainted member of Salem Church. And so I'd have to defer to someone else who grew up here. They wouldn't know all that kind of history. We had people out here like John Lee Johnson. We have a street named for him as a memorial from University Avenue to Bradley on 4th Street, you know, things of that nature. He was in the forefront, and he worked along with Herb Stevens, who was very much a part of our early King Committee. And he was the individual that became our funding chair for a good period of time until he passed on. Yes.
The service that you have been organizing for 32 years, when you first started putting it together, what was the goal?
Well, the goal was to keep Dr. King's name alive and to strive to further the freedom and justice things that he fought for. That was my goal, and still our goal today is to help young people to understand something about what Dr. King stood for, and never let that become a thing that they would not relate to. And so we thought that being an organization that wanted young people to grow up having a greater degree of success in life, we felt that scholarships would be the best route for us to get the children to get their education and have something to strive toward educationally so that they could take care of themselves and have good jobs. We've had many successful individuals.
Do you have a sense how many scholarships you all have awarded over the years?
We've awarded over 250, yes, over the years. And then the early days, well, let me first tell you about Chief Anthony Cobb. He was in our first class of scholarship recipients.
Oh, interesting.
And that was in 1988 when we first started giving scholarships. And we only gave out about five scholarships, a one-time scholarship of $500. But in the 90s, we got to the point where we would give $1,000 each year to as many as 10 students. We vacillated between 8 and 10 students over the years to try to fund as many scholarships as possible.
Well, and how interesting is it that you see the recipients now? The chief of police for the city of Champaign is someone who was one of your scholarship recipients. Do you see sort of, you have the decades of being able to see the seeds of your efforts with the scholarship work?
Definitely, definitely. And we always meet on a friendly basis, and certainly we look back and recognize how far we've come over the years. And another Cobb, those Cobb kids were really smart. We had several of them that were our scholarship recipients. Dominic, that works here on campus now, Dominic Cobb, was one of our recipients as well.
We're going to take a break. I'm speaking with Reverend Claude Shelby. He's pastor of Salem Baptist Church in Champaign. He's the founder of the Martin Luther King Jr. Community Celebration that's taken place since 1986, since the national holiday began. When we come back, we're going to continue this conversation with Pastor Shelby. Stay tuned. You're listening to The 21st. You're listening to The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. On this day, this national holiday to recognize Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., we are speaking with the Reverend Claude Shelby. He's a senior pastor of Salem Baptist Church in Champaign. For 32 years, he's been organizing the Martin Luther King Jr. Community Celebration that takes place at the University of Illinois at the Krannert Center for Performing Arts the Sunday before the holiday. Pastor Shelby, I wanted to ask, there was a time you got to meet Dr. King. It was during a rally at a church you helped organize in St. Louis with a group of other pastors. What was it like to meet him?
Well, he's always been a very dynamic individual, and certainly being a member of the clergy myself, and I was a pastor in St. Louis at the time, we certainly had an opportunity to press the flesh, so to speak, and to listen to his dynamic words. He always had a great message about freedom and justice, and as a leader in our spiritual side of things, certainly we always tried to lead our people in a way by which they could experience, you know, the better things of life, you know, have desegregation and open avenues to jobs and being able to support their families in order that they would have that kind of economic benefit. And so we always try to elevate ourselves. And
I'm just thinking about Dr. King. I know you also attended his funeral, and I wonder if you could help us understand, if you could take us back to what it was like to for you to experience that loss. What do you remember from that time?
Well, it was a very moving experience. The whole nation was, for the most part, the community that I knew, we really felt saddened by losing such a great leader. It's just like having a benefit just snatched from under you because he was out front, very dynamic, and many people, you know, listened to him, to listen to his message, and especially espousing the nonviolent way of getting things changed. And many times in the past, there were always times of real conflict, but yet our people in the King movement never fought back. They would take passively whatever the outcome might have been, whether there were police dogs or billy clubs or what have you. They took it and went on to jail, spent their time in jail, and then got out of jail and continued to do the things that were for freedom and justice for everybody.
Pastor Shelby, do you think that today, generations who did not live through the civil rights movement, those of us who've learned about it in school, through history, from talking to people like yourself, from visiting museums, do you think that younger generations have a good enough understanding of what happened during the civil rights movement?
Not having experienced it really doesn't give you, in my estimation, the full brunt of that kind of life. I'm sure you younger people have come up in a time where you always had freedom to do practically what you wanted to do. It depended upon you as an individual.
So what do you want us to know about that time for those of us who didn't live through it and didn't experience what you experienced?
I want you to know that it was a real struggle. It was a real experience, and a billy club comes upside your head, you felt the pain.
Did that happen to you?
No, I didn't get hit.
But a lot of that did happen to a lot of people.
Not being in the South, I didn't,
sure.
But I knew of it. And that always gave me a mission to try to make things better. No matter where I was, I always wanted things to be better for my children and others coming along. We want to think better for ourselves, first of all, and then for succeeding generations. And I don't think that the younger people today really have the true appreciation for what some of the older ones had gone through down through the years. But it was a real struggle. It was a real hands-on type of situation where people were being spit upon, you know. People were being kicked. People were experiencing those real actions. And so I always had a real feeling for individuals that were going through those experiences.
And when we think about generations now, and I think about our youngest generation of Americans, I think about children who were born in the past 8 years. The only president they've ever known has been a black president.
Yes.
I wonder if, as we think about also in this time, the last week of the Obama presidency, the first black president in this country, did you ever think we would get to this point in your lifetime?
No. And I don't think there were many individuals that felt that we would get to this point. And I just wonder when the next black president will be elected. It might be another whole several generations from now, but hopefully it will not be. Because, Dr. King always talked about that we should not be judged by the color of our skin, but by the content of our character. And he was always dreaming of a better day ahead. And I'm certain that if he were alive today, that he would be surprised that we hadn't made as much progress as he felt that we should have made. And that's the kind of feelings I have as well.
Well, and when you say that, I can't help but think about the movements that we've seen in the past couple of years of young people of color, particularly looking at movements like the Black Lives Matter movement, mm-hmm. the protests and conversations we've had about policing in community and relations, the fatal shootings of black men and women at the hands of police. Mm-hmm. I wonder what do you think about all of those conversations and those movements today? Do you feel like does this seem to you like what the civil rights era was like? Is it a similar kind of feeling?
I would think so, because police seem to have gotten more violent against individuals of color. You know, we did go through quite a bit, but we weren't being shot down for a little minor kinds of things, nonviolent kinds of things that individuals might get caught up in.
Certainly and the shootings we've seen of unarmed.
Shooting unarmed mm-hmm. Black men primarily, and that's been really a problem. And so when the Black Lives Matter movement came about, so many didn't want to accept that as really being something that we should be espousing of you know, really Black Lives Matter. And what I'm thinking, no one was saying that other lives don't matter, but I think the Black Lives Matter movement was saying Black Lives Matter too, also, and where other individuals didn't seem to regard, you know, Black lives.
And do you see it as a similar way in which, when you were, I'm thinking about the sit-ins that you did, you said the sort of the hostility that you encountered. Do you see parallels, or how similar is it, the protests that we see now versus the ones that you were a part of?
Well, I think the protests are more acceptable today than they might have been back in the olden days. And so we do have the right to assemble, the right to protest, even the right to burn the flag. That's the current matter that's with
sure,
us now.
Sure, it's a current discussion happening in Central Illinois.
And so it's a matter of freedom of speech, but I would never burn a flag, and I wouldn't encourage anybody to burn a flag. I love our nation, and we feel that we certainly have a lot of flaws, but we are an imperfect union, but we're striving, I think, you know, toward freedom.
Pastor Shelby, what do you think is the most important civil rights, equal rights issue that's facing our country?
Well, just being able to have decent employment. And when you think about the national unemployment rate being in the 4-point-some percent, unemployment and with African Americans up in the teens.
Well, and you think about Illinois, how much further behind we are from the rest of the country with our unemployment and jobless rates.
I'm thinking because of our poor economic situation in Illinois, I think somehow we are further behind because our state government is not doing what they need to do to help out the economic side. So that in itself would probably account for a higher unemployment rate and the like.
And certainly when we think about the towards the end of Dr. King's life, how much his message was moving to an economic message, and how much he was emphasizing the importance of jobs within the civil rights movement, the importance of having equal economic opportunity. I think everyone also thinks about, when they think of Dr. King, they think of his I Have a Dream speech. That's kind of the famous one. But for you, I wonder, what do you think is his greatest legacy? Is it the notion that of how much his message was of economic rights? Was it the nonviolence? Was it where do you see as his greatest legacy?
Well, it seems as though most every right that an individual could have certainly would sum up to affecting an individual economically. So I somehow feel that the economics would everything would sort of go toward that area of our lives.
That said, I wonder what you feel like it looks like today. I'm thinking about the work you've done, the scholarship program we were talking about with high school students. That's associated with the Sunday event to honor Dr. King. But what do you feel like it looks like today to work towards the dream that Dr. King had and talked about for this country?
Yeah, most of the themes that we've had over the years sort of centered around the dream of freedom and equality and justice for all individuals. And there's an economic piece there as well as a decency piece, whereby we want to feel that we could have public accommodations anywhere and accomplish those kinds of things. And when we think about the national holiday that came about in the bill was signed in 1985 by President Reagan, and then the first national holiday was the third Monday in 1986. When we think of those times, we think about the first national holiday being chaired by Coretta Scott King, you know, the widow of Dr. Martin Luther King. And Governor Thompson in Illinois was the national vice chair. And so he felt very much a part of bringing that movement to Illinois. So we had a state holiday council, and I was a part of the religious committee. You know, there was
this was in the 80s.
This was in 85.
Okay.
When the holiday became a national holiday, and then the we worked toward that 1986 date, third Monday in January. We worked toward that date of getting our people ready to observe that national holiday. So the religious committee was comprised, the leadership was Reverend Clay Evans of Chicago, Illinois, one of our very prominent black pastors, is still alive today. He's not actively pastoring. And the late Cardinal Bernardine, they were the co-chairs of our religious committee. And then I became a part of that committee. And so we would come up with ways by which we could honor Dr. King on the national holiday in our local areas. And so we would come up with ways, and those things would go forth throughout all the communities, that these are ways by which you can honor Dr. King. And so one of the things that we did after we organized our Dr. Martin Luther King Advocacy for Justice Group, at the time I was president of the Ministerial Alliance of Champaign-Urbana Community, and also a part of the Pastors Association that comprised of black and white, although the Alliance have black and white as well, but the larger community was of a clergy, belonged to the Ministerial Association. And so I had membership in both groups. And so I organized from those two groups. I sent out letters to the greater community group as well as the Alliance, and we had mostly pastors that were members.
Is it still pastors now, mostly?
It's primarily, but we have parachurch organizations who have people that we're very much supported by the Jewish community. Rabbi Cook, a dear friend of mine, his church really works hard to. He's one of our largest contributors. They give at least over $3,000 every year.
For the scholarships.
Yes, and our church gives $2,000. And so they are a very strong group that the Jewish community worked with Dr. King over the years, mm-hmm. and they still feel that they should be very much a part of the freedom movement today. And we always have them participate in our services as well. And we don't discriminate against any denomination. It's sort of ecumenical type of service, but it kind of leans toward, you know, the Christian part of our community.
Thank you so much for joining me. Reverend Claude Shelby is the senior pastor at Salem Baptist Church in Champaign, organizer of the 32nd. This year was the 32nd annual Martin Luther King Jr. Community Celebration that happened at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts. Thank you for being with me, Reverend Shelby.
Thank you for having me.
Now is the time to make the real promises of democracy. Now is the time to rise from the dark and desolate valley of segregation to the sunlit path of racial justice. Now is the time to lift our nation from the quicksands of racial injustice to the solid rock of brotherhood. Now is the time to make justice a reality for all of God's children. It would be fatal for the nation to overlook the urgency of the moment. The sweltering summer of the Negro's legitimate discontent will not pass until there is an invigorating autumn of freedom and equality. 1963 is not an end, but a beginning. And those who hope that the Negro needs to blow off steam and will now be content will have a rude awakening if the nation returns to business as usual. There will be neither rest nor tranquility in America until the Negro is granted his citizenship rights. The whirlwinds of revolt will continue to shake the foundation of our nation until the bright day of justice emerges. But there is something that I must say to my people who stand on the warm threshold which leads into the palace of justice. In the process of gaining our rightful place, we must not be guilty of wrongful deeds. Let us not seek to satisfy our thirst for freedom by drinking from the cup of bitterness and hatred. we must forever conduct our struggle on the high plane of dignity and discipline. We must not allow our creative protest to degenerate into physical violence. Again and again, we must rise to the majestic heights of meeting physical force with soul force.
You're listening to The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo, and that was Springfield actor Reggie Guyton. Reggie will be reading the entire speech, I Have a Dream, that the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. is so famous for, on the Monday holiday outside the main plaza of the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library. He joins us now from the museum, along with museum spokesman Chris Wills. Reggie, Chris, welcome to The 21st. Thanks for being with me.
Thanks for having us.
Reggie, what do you do to prepare? I can't imagine the pressure or, well, I'm not an actor, so I mean, I speak every day, but not like this, right? So how do you prepare to read Dr. King's I Have a Dream speech outside the Lincoln Presidential Library on Martin Luther King Jr. Day?
Well, besides screaming and hoping that I can fill such large shoes, I do take time to meditate a little bit on the words and the sentiment and the meaning and the intention behind it, because that alone has so much force, positive energy behind it. Dr. Martin Luther King has profoundly changed and left an impact on this nation, and it's awe-inspiring to even think of the place that he may have been in when he was thinking or writing these words. So I do take a while, at least a couple days, just to read the speech over and over again. I like to talk about it with my boss, Phil Funkenbush, and we really dissect and really get into the meat of what he was hoping to accomplish with his speech. But along with that, I do take time to even walk through the museum and reflect what a profound effect that speech has left for me as a African-American male in this country now. So I really take solace on the fact that he strove for peace and equality, and he never underestimated the power of soul force and the power of the human spirit. And that's something really admirable to look forward to. And I always try to make sure that I carry the intention of the writer and the speaker with me at all times. And how could you not with such gracious and thought-provoking words?
Well, and certainly I think the words to this speech are something, I mean, it's one of those few speeches, I think, you know, frankly, other than maybe the Gettysburg Address, that a lot of American school children learn and know. And I think going from that sort of basic understanding that probably every American child has to the knowledge that you have and how you've studied this, I wonder, you said something about the goal of this speech. I mean, for you, what do you think the goal was for Dr. King when he was delivering that?
I think his goal was not only to unify the nation, but also to encourage and call others to arms to work for justice, to work for equality, to work for peace. And peace is a struggle. You have to continuously work at it. It is not something that comes overnight. And I think he was very mindful of that and encouraged others through his words and through his dreams for this country to strive for the betterment of the nation, not only for ourselves, but our children and our children's children and the future thereon after. I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, no, it's a big one. And I guess, is that what you think about? Is that what you're going to be thinking about when you're delivering this?
Yes, I every time I think of his words, and specifically his words about joining hands, the sons and daughters of slave owners and former slaves joining hands, I think about that often, and I think about the different friends that I have, and even going to college and the experiences that I've had, and the conversations that were difficult and tedious and were laced with blood, sweat, and tears. I think about all the things that we accomplished, all the projects, all the conversations that we had, and the disagreements that we had within those, but the ability to reach a common goal and to do so peacefully. I take that hope always, and I hope that when I start my own family, that I can tell them, hey, you know, when I was growing up, we had disagreements, and there are often times where people who were different from each other, came from different socioeconomic backgrounds and different ideas of what it means to be an American, we came together and we transcended all of that and made a better future for everyone. And I really cling to that hope in hopes that other people feel it too, and then it'll just catch fire and spread. There's so many things that I could talk about.
When you say that, I can't help but think of this past year, right? And think about particularly the conversations we've had, it seems like for the past 3 or 4 years, around race and race relations in this country and this presidential campaign. I wonder how you feel about delivering those words at a point where our nation does seem to be in a really divided place, and some of that along racial lines.
I had to come to terms with the fact that there are many different people that would not understand the impact of different decisions that were made, whether that involves politics or protests or just standing up for basic human rights. I had to understand that a lot of people come from different vantage points, and you can't often see the full picture unless you step back away from it. But right now it's so close to our face that it's so hard not to focus on the smaller parts of the big picture. So my hope, not to wear that term out, but that's all I feel that we have at sometimes, all that we have at some points is hope. So my hope is that we can take a step back and really dissect and digest all of the good that we have in every group. There's good in every group, whether we realize it or not. And I think Martin Luther King knew that. He knew that, and he wanted to call that out of people. So my hope is that I would speak to someone who is of the same age as me, someone who is older than me, someone who's younger than me, someone who comes from a different background. I hope that these words that they may or may not have heard in their entirety speak to people, and that they really strive to make this world a better place.
I'm speaking with Reggie Guyton. He's an actor. He actually performs in the Ghosts of the Library show at the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library on the holiday that is Martin Luther King Day. He will be reading the I Have a Dream speech in the main plaza in Springfield outside the library. We're talking to him and to Chris Wills, who's a spokesman at the museum. I want to ask you both. Dr. King, of course, delivered this speech. I went back and was reading it when I was preparing to talk to you guys. And right at the beginning, I think we kind of forget that he even himself notes, I'm delivering this in the shadow of the Lincoln Memorial. He mentions the Emancipation Proclamation. Reggie, for you, do you often think about the link, as I think especially because of your work, between President Lincoln and Dr. King?
I'm humbled and often caught off guard with how much of an effect the words of the Gettysburg Address, they touch me. Lincoln himself talked about the importance of sacrifice, and he says that, you know, these deaths would not be in vain. And thinking about that relevancy, I often internalize the sacrifices and the struggles of many people who came before me, even my own mother and father, the things that they had to give up to make sure that I would have a better life. And I think about how Lincoln paved the way for that by equalizing it, and to see that same ideal happen to be personified in Dr. Martin Luther King later on in 1963 and beyond is incredible.
Chris, for you, how does the Lincoln Presidential Library try to honor this link that Reggie's been telling us about?
Well, I think it's fair to say that Abraham Lincoln, with the Emancipation Proclamation, with the amendment ending slavery and the following civil rights amendments, sort of made a promise. But at the time of Martin Luther King, that promise had not nearly been fulfilled. African Americans still did not have true equality. And so we see the link between the two of them being that Martin Luther King's life was in some ways a continuation of Abraham Lincoln's work, and they were heading toward the same goal. So each year, we think it's more than appropriate. We think it's essentially, you know, mandatory that we take some time and think about the two men and about how Abraham Lincoln began something, but many, many, many others over the years, including Dr. King, had to continue that work and try to finish it, and it's still going on now. So we hope that Monday's events help our visitors take a few minutes and think about what began, what work was done later, and what work still remains to be done.
And every year, the library also celebrates Dr. King with a community day. Chris, what does that entail?
Well, two things, really. One is that we allow community groups, you know, nonprofit organizations that serve the community, to visit the library and museum for free on Martin Luther King's birthday. You know, we think that's a very concrete way to recognize what was important to him, service to others. So we're saying to community groups, give us a call, register in advance, and we'll allow your group to come and visit for free that day so that you can, you know, learn about Abraham Lincoln and you can get a small reward for all that you do for other people. And then also, we allow groups to set up in our plaza inside the museum and hand out literature and answer questions and basically tell our visitors about their very important work. You know, we want the day to be about doing something, helping people, not just taking a day off from work or from school.
That's the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library and Museum events that will be happening on the Monday holiday for to honor Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Thank you for joining us, Reggie Guyton and Chris Wells. Reggie, can you end us? I think it's a good way for us to end by hearing the end of the speech.
And when we allow freedom to ring, when we let it ring from every village and every hamlet, from every state and every city, we will be able to speed up that day when all of God's children, black men and white men, Jews and Gentiles, Protestants and Catholics, will be able to join hands and to sing in the words of the old Negro spiritual, "Free at last, free at last. Thank God Almighty, we are free at last."
I'm afraid that's it for us today. You can always find past shows on the NPR One app. Search for The 21st. We're also available on iTunes and Android. All of those links, every other way to contact us, whether it's phone, email, or social media, is all at our website, 21stshow.org. You can follow us on Twitter. Search for 21stshow. We live tweet during the show with more analysis and background about what we're talking about. When we're not on the air, lots of news and information about Illinois. On our Facebook page, search for The 21st to like us. You can also comment on what we're working on or post questions or comments you want us to ask on air. We're produced by Haula Delahi, Christine Herman, and Sean Newman. Technical direction comes from Jason Croft with help from Steve Mork. Scott Cameron is our executive editor. Thanks to Joe Yoon and Nick Vance from the University of Illinois' Social Media Analytics Lab for their research help. And special thanks to the band Public Access for our theme music. I'm Nyla Boodoo. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. Thanks for listening.